The safety of your loved ones has never been more important. That's why Safety Insurance offers the Drive with Safety app, which gives you the ability to monitor driving habits that will help improve the performance of every driver in the family. Plus, save 5% on your auto policy. Ask an independent agent about Safety Insurance. We'll help you manage life's storms.
B-Pod Studios.
This is Felger.
Felgstradamus.
And Mass.
You're not going to get anybody half decent for free.
Presented by DraftKings on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Just your thoughts on facing Buffalo here for a third time. What are the challenges in facing a team three times in a season?
Good team, obviously. You know, third seed in the division, in the conference. So, yeah, we know they're a good team. And, I certainly played well in the last game we had against them. So, yeah, we got a lot to get ready for.
And it's hour number two of Felger and Maz on a Big Boy Tuesday. That's Greg Bedard from the Boston Sports Journal. He's brought to you by the Granite Group. Granite Group's an award-winning distributor of Mitsubishi Electric's heating and air conditioning systems with locations across Massachusetts and New England. Learn more at customizedcomfort.com. Give me a minute on Patriots-Bills round three, Greg.
Well, I thought before the last four games, I thought that the Patriots stood a very good chance of, if they played the Bills, doing much better the next time. I thought, while Josh Allen played well in that game, I did not think he was great in that game. I thought it said more about the Patriots' defense. I thought it was their worst game of the season. They were undisciplined in their rush. They were terrible in their coverage. The Bills targeted the Patriots' linebackers in coverage. I thought that they had enough ways to counter that and sort of adjust and do better against the Bills a second time. I still feel that way. If they're going to execute, if you could tell me all the guys in defense are going to buy in and do their jobs, then yeah, I think they have a good chance. I mean, even with all that went wrong with the Patriots in that game, it was still a one score game in the fourth quarter. You know, all they had to do was get Josh Allen off the field. They could not the entire game. But I think that the Patriots have it in them to play better. I would look for them. If I'm the Patriots, I'm completely inviting the run by the Bills. I'm going with three or four defensive linemen. I'm not putting Hightower or Juwan Bentley at inside linebacker. I'm putting Kyle Duggar and Adrian Phillips at inside linebacker. I'm going with six defensive backs. If the Bills want to run, they can run. But I'm not playing slow and ineffective like the Patriots did in the last matchup.
Okay, go back to the phones, Mass, unless you had a follow-up thought there.
No.
Okay, then let's go to the phone, shall we? Here's Justin in Bridgewater. What do you got, Justin?
How you doing? Long-time fan of the show. Just a question. Your reaction to the Brian Flores firing. That's it. Thank you.
Okay, stand by. In about 10 minutes, we'll do 10 questions around the league with Greg Bedard, and that is on the list. So why don't we just save it for that, if you don't mind. Paul is in Hyde Park. Hi, Paul.
Yes, good afternoon. Question for you guys. Has the Patriots always played the bend but not break defense under Belichick? Or does it come more in play with Patricia kind of being in the scene there?
Okay. Greg, I'm sorry, Paul. Greg, do you think there's a lapsing into a passiveness, a bend but don't break thing here? Or it's just not executing? In other words, they've been playing at a similar aggressive level all season long. It's just they've either played well or not.
I think that the Patriots, when they have coverage guys that they have confidence in, they take more risks and they're more aggressive, like we saw like the last time Brian Flores was here. I think that with the Stephon Gilmore trade, the Jonathan Jones injury, the way they play defense, watching the film, they have zero confidence that they can cover in the back end. And so they're playing soft because they think they have to because they don't have the talent.
We've got Mike in the car. He's up next on the Patriots regular season. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I know we're putting a lot of pressure on Mac Jones, but Greg, if you go back to one play, they had Brandon Bolden out in the flat on the left. Mac Jones, instead of sidestepping, there is pressure. He doesn't sidestep the pressure. He lost the ball. By the time the ball gets to Bolden, defender is on him. There was a play to be made, but he couldn't turn it because, you know, the velocity that the ball got there.
Okay, do you know what play talking about?
I do remember the play. I was trying to find my notes on it. I don't remember where it was in, because there was a similar Jonnu Smith play. I vaguely remember the play that he's talking about. I think that, if I recall correctly, I didn't love Mac's decision in general on that play. I thought there were, you know, I had him for 5 minus decisions in this game. He threw a couple balls up for grabs that could have been picked off. I just think he's a little flustered. He's a little sped up. I think the Dolphins had something to do with that. Flores and those guys know what to do with the Patriots offense and sort of how to target them. So I think that the Dolphins contributed to that he just looked uneasy from the start in that game. They do a good job of mixing up rush and coverage. But yeah, I mean, Mac, with each passing week, he has more, in my opinion, he has more questionable decision-making in the game. It's not a huge problem, but it's been slowly growing the second half of the season.
We've got Sean in Salem. What do you got for the big boy, Greg Bedard?
Let's talk some numbers. At the end of the first half and start of the second half this year for these Patriots, they had the ball 3 times in the last minute of the first half, a 20-year low. They knelt on it twice and kicked 1 field goal. And then they had the ball to start the second half 6 times this year. 2 turnovers, 2 touchdowns, including a pick 6 against the Saints in week 3. Even worse is they trailed 8 times at the half. And in the third quarter this year, they had 1 touchdown against Houston. That's it. And the other touchdowns that they had to start the second half were against Houston and Jacksonville. It's not a game plan that we're used to from Bill. He's playing scared or not to lose. Not to protect Mac Jones, just not to lose. And it's not winning football.
And what you're also saying is, what's the point of deferring the kickoff if that's how you're going to play at the end of the second quarter and the beginning of the third? It's kind of pointless. It defeats the purpose, Maz. That's what you've been saying.
Yeah, again, that's a huge part of it. And the other thing is, meanwhile, you are falling behind early, constantly. And I just think you got to make the decision based on what kind of team you have. And this year, they have a team that can't play from behind. So take the ball to start the game. Just take the ball. It's okay.
Ralph's in Worcester. Hi, Ralph.
Yeah, I just want to ask Greg. You talked about the Buffalo game that doesn't count. And obviously, I guess the Jacksonville win doesn't count either. So do the losses not count either? Because they were in all those games. They haven't gotten blown out. But yet you take the Buffalo game where they basically told Buffalo what they were going to do. But if that doesn't count, Greg? Explain.
Ralph, was the Buffalo game, was that a real football game? Was that like what they're going to see under 95% of the circumstances,
Greg,
like come Saturday night?
Was it,
Ralph? I'm asking you a question. Was it indicative of 95% of NFL football games? The answer is no. It was not. It so it doesn't count. And the Jags blow. So no, it doesn't count. They had 3 games to actually get real seeding, to hang on to the number 1 seed in the conference. And what do they do? They vomited on themselves. 57-7. Yeah. It's on the scoreboard.
You can't cherry pick. And that's what you're doing. You're cherry picking from what games don't. Give me a break.
So listen, Ralph, Greg, let's not cherry pick. Let's just call it what it is, 10-7. It's just not that good. Like, that's
1-3.
It's 9-7. You know, whatever. So it's an extra game, so it sounds a little beefier, but that's, for all intents and purposes, 9-7. And you were the number 1 seed going into December 14th or whatever the hell it was. You were the number 1 seed midway through December. And you've lost 3 of 4 to finish 10-7. You have 7 losses. So let's not cherry pick any of them. Let's call them all. Let's just, all things are equal. All right, just to make you feel better.
Felger, they have beaten 1 playoff team, the Titans, when they were a complete shell of themselves, and they were within 1 yard of being 1 score in the fourth quarter. The scoreboard says it all. Nobody's cherry picking. 1 win over a playoff team against a lesser Titans team.
They beat Buffalo, Greg.
He's not counting that.
Oh,
it's Buffalo. Yeah.
Okay. See, I'll be honest with you. Just quickly, Mike.
2.
I'm more concerned about how they have played and performed against some of the mediocre teams. Like, you want to tell me they're going to lose to the good teams? Fine. I get it. Like, I don't expect them to beat Tampa Bay. I don't expect them to beat Buffalo, frankly. Like, all things being equal, no wind, Greg. Okay? But the game against New Orleans, how did they look in that game? They lost to Miami twice.
Oh, my God.
Twice. And so you can just go up and down and look at some of these, you know, Indianapolis, mediocre team. They get their asses kicked. So, like,
Mike, to Mike me, and Tony, there's two teams. The AFC East has two teams, the Bills and the Dolphins, that have beaten the Patriots 3 out of 4 times. That's where they are.
I mean, I'm not cherry picking anything. I don't think their season was that impressive at all. I was barely good enough. As Matt said, they got swept by the Dolphins, who aren't a playoff team. They lost to the Saints, who aren't a playoff team. They're just 10-7. You're going to see going forward is just really not that good of a year. It's a middling year. I don't know where their schedule strength resided, but it couldn't have been that good. Did they have that hard of a schedule? But again, that goes back to the cherry picking thing. Let's just call it what it is. They've lost 3 of 4 and are 10-7. That's just blah. I don't know. I don't think that's that good. I thought you were better than that. I really did.
It's mediocre. It's very mediocre.
Joe and Stoneham, go.
So this is why I hate deferring, but I think in the Bills' two previous games, it was important that the Bills kicked off first, because the pass went 4 and out on both of those games, punted. The first game, the Bills got the ball on like the 50. In the second game, they got it on the 40. So I think it's really important for the pass to kick off this game, have the defense actually do what they're supposed to, get a 4 and out, have Buffalo punt it, and have the Patriots start with actual field position instead of 25.
I got to tell you, but I sort of referenced this the first call that I took on the coin flip. The number of people who are obsessed with this thing now is it's getting a little much. The last time you played the Buffalo Bills, they didn't punt, okay? So what does it matter if you kick, receive? Kick twice, receive twice. Come up with something else. Let's do the XFL thing, how they started the game. We used to throw the ball, and the two guys used to go run after it and, you know, like, chase each other down. Let's do that thing. If you can't force a punt, what's the effing difference? Like, I think people put the cart before the horse a little bit. They got to play better, and then we'll talk about the effing coin flip. But you can join us on that if you want. Look, we're not going to discriminate. It's just, boy, how about first things first? And first things first right now, our 10 questions with Greg Bedard. We'll do it right after this.
Hey, it's Greg Bedard from BostonSportsJournal.com. It's January, the time of year we're bombarded with weight loss commercials. Gyms, exercise equipment, diet plans, and full-service programs like Awaken 180 Weight Loss. No matter who's advertising, it's good to see so many people taking the steps to get healthy. Awaken 180 won't discredit alternative methods for weight loss. If other programs have you feeling full, energized, and has a plan for keeping the weight off, feel proud. If you haven't selected a program yet, I suggest doing what I did and check out Awaken 180 Weight Loss. Set up a consultation, ask questions, and have enough information to decide if it's right for you. To answer a few questions now, yes, it's easy. No, the gym isn't required. And yes, Awaken 180 provides free support for life after you lose the weight. I've now lost 60 pounds, and each week I'm getting closer to my goal thanks to Awaken 180. 7 locations. I go to the newest in Auburn. Book your consultation today at awaken180weightloss.com.
Sports Hub. What do you want to talk about?
Mike in Framingham, what?
Felger and Mass.
Hey, I love your show. I don't agree with anything you guys ever say, though.
More Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. You want the answer? You've got to ask the question.
Do you have an opinion based on if you had to go with your gut, which way it would go?
Sometimes you have to ask it over and over and over again.
Why?
This is 10 Questions with Greg Bedard and Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, 10 Questions with Greg Bedard is presented by Granite City Electric. Electrical contractors, get on board the GCE Night Train. Order your materials to be delivered overnight to the job site the following morning and save time and money. Go to GCENightTrain.com. 10 questions, 10 minutes. We have to be on time. Jimmy, what are our buzzer options, please?
I know contrarian is in and sexy and all that shit.
Said contrarianism is definitely sexy. No doubt about it. Next.
Pats have to travel to Cincinnati, correct? They don't host the playoff game?
Correct. That's They'd be the wild card team. They have to go to Cincinnati. That's right.
Oh, that's stupid. My God.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, so is that, so's your call.
Folks, you can't swear on our air, even though we'll replay it with a beep. Go ahead.
Let's not get our sausages out of our pans because the Bruins are on a 3-game winning streak.
Okay, we're going to revisit that call, actually, in a little bit. Next.
Keep your sausage in the casing.
I mean, it's pig casing, right, Jimmy?
It's another poorly executed play.
Thank you very much, Bill.
The whole thing was poorly executed.
Couldn't agree more.
Another poorly executed play.
Yep, definitely the case. Fail. Not a successful season.
That's it.
Okay. If they lose on Saturday in Buffalo. Hit it, James. Fail. Not a successful season. All right. As promised, what's your take on what's going on in Florida and the Dolphins right now? Brian Flores, that whole situation.
Typical Dolphins with Stephen Ross. He has no idea what he's doing. I think Flores is a good coach. You know, he doesn't exactly rub everyone the right way, but he has a vision for his team. And if you hire a head coach, you got to follow through with that. And if, you know, if Greer doesn't like it, then he needs to be the one that moves out, grab a personnel guy that Flores can work with. And, you know, look, I think that what they've done, they've made progress. They almost made the playoffs this year. I like what Flores was doing. Stephen Ross has no clue.
If you're asking me what are the Miami Dolphins doing, I would tell you they are continuing to suck.
Yeah, I have no idea. The owner, Stephen Ross, impatient moron, and there's no reason to choose that dumb GM who chose the pop gun quarterback over Justin Herbert over Brian Flores. Flores should have got another shot.
If they just go back into the generic NFL coordinator pool and pull out another assistant, that's freaking stupid. Mm-hmm. They're not going to do better than Brian Flores. If they got something bigger up their sleeve, then okay, we'll see. The one thing I would say in defense of the whole situation is that hasn't Flores rifled through like a bunch of offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators?
Yep.
You know, it feels like to me, and now he's beefing with his GM, it's like, feels like to me he might be a little difficult behind the scenes. I wonder where he learned that from. But anyway, next.
Keep your sausage in the casing.
Okay. What are the Giants doing, Greg Bedard?
No idea. Sucking, as Matt said. I mean, they're completely clueless. They're going to have another shotgun wedding between what? Joe Judge, and if they keep him, and I don't think that's 100% yet. They're still meeting about that. They're going to put him with another GM. That won't work. Then the GM will get a chance to hire a coach, and that won't work. It's just, they're just awful.
If the Dolphins are continuing to suck, the Giants continuing to blow.
Committing to another year of failure. That's it.
Nice symmetry there, Maz. Next.
I know contrarian is in and sexy and all that shit.
Okay, number 8. Did Brandon Staley screw up by calling that late timeout Sunday in Vegas?
Yes and no. I think that the Raiders were going to run the ball there. I think they were content. If they popped the run, then they kicked the field goal. If not, they were just going to let the clock run out. And so if he called a timeout to get the personnel to defend the run better, then I was okay with it. But he didn't. He took a linebacker off the field, put a safety out there, and they gave up 10 yards and lost. So it all depended on what he did with the timeout. He used it wrong. It was bad. Go for it from your own 18-yard line again.
Yes, he screwed up. He should have let the clock run, make him run the play without the benefit of being able to reset. And then, regardless, it still wasn't as bad as the fourth and going for it on fourth down on your own 18-yard line, you jackass.
Yes, it's now obviously clear, based on everything that they've said on the Raiders' end over the last couple of days, they were willing to play for the tie. He overthought it like he does pretty much everything.
Number 7, Jimmy.
It's another poorly executed play.
Of the 6 current head coaching openings, including Vegas, what's the most attractive job? What's the least attractive job?
The least attractive job is Jacksonville if Trent Baalke staying. That's the least attractive. I think that the Bears job is the most attractive because it Rodgers isn't long for the division. The Vikings are looking for another coach. Justin Fields, there is something to work with there. There is talent on that roster. I think it's the quickest turnaround.
Minnesota's the worst job. Loser quarterback, loser franchise, you're screwed. Don't take the job. You're going nowhere in Minnesota. The best job, I would say Chicago's the best job. I mean, to me, you got a promising young quarterback who's got all types of, you know, versatility to his game. It's a good market. You know, historic franchise. I would take my chance with the Bears.
See, I see the least is the Chicago Bears. Terrible ownership. No first-round draft pick. Meh roster. Most attractive? I think Denver. Solid roster. It feels like it's a quarterback away.
Next.
Keep your sausage in the casing.
Ah, speaking of which, Did the 49ers comeback win over the Rams say more about San Francisco or about Los Angeles, Greg?
I didn't see the game. I'm just going off what I've read and the highlights that I've seen. But I would say it's about the Rams and about Stafford and about how they couldn't get the key stop.
San Francisco, 35-15, Jimmy G now in his career in the NFL. He has finally started 50 games counting postseason. 35-15, you do not want to play them.
Says more about the Rams. They can't beat the Niners. Sean McVay, 0-6 against them since he became the coach there. And have you heard the whining from him and specifically Matt Stafford about the crowd noise in their own building? Oh, there's too many Niners fans here in SoFi Stadium. F off. They're frauds.
Absolutely says more about the Rams, in my opinion. Next.
Pats have to travel to Cincinnati, correct? They don't host the playoff game?
Correct. That's They'd right. be the wild card team. They have to go to Cincinnati. That's right.
Oh, that's stupid. My God.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, so is that, okay, so's well, your call.
Number five, who was the biggest tool bag of the 2021 season? Forget MVP, forget Coach of the Year. Tool bag of the year.
Can I just say quickly, Mike, this was an excellent question.
Oh, well, thank you.
With an epic close, it's Joe Judge. To follow up on Matt Patricia's award from the year before. So the Patriots are doing well. Those press conferences were just absurd. Yeah, way to call the team you're about to play a clown show before they come in and beat your ass in your own place. Nice job.
This was the most hotly contested award in the NFL this year, which is why I'm going to let Murray go first because I have so many candidates I can't lose. Yeah, go ahead, Murray.
That's the thing. There were a lot of good candidates from Joe Judge to Henry Ruggs, but I went with any idiot who compared this year's Patriots team to the 2001 team and Mac Jones to a young Brady. How's that now look, dummy?
Okay, I had Antonio Brown on my list, Urban Meyer on my list. I mean, you could name them all. Do I have to pick one? Can I give out a third of the award to each tool bag out there? Like, one gets a wrench, one gets a screwdriver, one gets a hammer.
Okay, no one has mentioned Aaron Charles Rodgers.
Another good one.
All right, who is the runaway winner, in my opinion. Next. Fail. Not a successful season. Number four, how do you feel about Monday Night Football in the playoffs, Greg?
Sure, why not? I don't want to hear any whining about a short week, you know, for the divisional round because the teams playing on Saturday have a short week this week. I don't want to hear the whining. Sure, why not?
Yeah, I like it. Again, the short week thing happens anyway. You play on Sunday and then play on Saturday. I get no problem with it. I like it.
It's here. My only beef with it is how it got scheduled. I think that should be the Patriots-Bills game and Arizona and the Rams. Like, who cares? Stuff that on Sunday afternoon.
I don't like it. Next.
Let's not get our sausages out of our pans because the Bruins on a 3-game winning streak.
Okay. It's after the last couple nights, though, maybe the sausage is beginning to creep its way out of the pants. Number three. Which of the following quarterbacks would you most like to have over the next 5 years? In fact, I'd like you to rank them, Greg, okay? Next 5 years. Not 10, not 15, not one game. 5 years. Ready? Mac Jones, Josh Allen, Jimmy Garoppolo, Jalen Hurts.
I have an answer, but I protest because you're going to make me say something nice about Josh Allen. My rankings are Josh Allen.
There it is.
Mac Jones, Jimmy Garoppolo, Jalen Hurts.
Wrong. Josh Allen, Jimmy G, Mac Jones, Jalen Hurts.
I go Allen, Hurts, Garoppolo, Mac Jones.
I knew that was coming. I love it.
Murray loves Jalen Hurts.
I do. I'm biased with Jalen Hurts.
So that's not really even an anti-Mac thing? You actually like Jalen Hurts?
I loved him when he was at Alabama, and then when he transferred. I like the kid's moxie. I know he's limited in terms of the throws he can make, but I like his overall makeup.
Okay, next. Fail. Not a successful season. Best game on the slate this weekend.
By far, it's Niners-Cowboys. You have the history, brings me back to my childhood. It's a great matchup. The 49ers can go in there and just make Jerry Jones. I can't wait for the close-ups to him as the 49ers are winning the game late. It's great, all of it.
That's the best one, but just so we don't give the same answers, the Rams-Cardinals game is a good game, too.
Yes, Cowboys-Niners. I'm with Greg.
Oh, Cowboys-Niners, absolutely. Last one.
Not poorly executed play.
Okay. Which teams, if they lose on Sunday, will have seasons that could be classified as failures, unsuccessful playoff seasons? Who loses with and gets that distinction?
The Rams, number one, they started 7-1, traded for Von Miller, Stafford, all that, and to lose in the first round after you did all that. Next, the Bills. They had the easiest schedule in the league, and if the Patriots come in and beat you after you won the division again, who cares? That would be embarrassing, and the Cardinals, for the way they started this season. If they fold, that's just a terrible look.
I mean, to me, there are a bunch of them. I would add, I just rattled them off in no particular order. Buffalo, Tampa, Dallas, Kansas City, the Rams, and maybe even Arizona. All massive failures if they lose this weekend.
Yeah, we're talking complete disasters. I just think it's three. Kansas City, if you lose to that Pittsburgh team that backed in with that fatso pervert quarterback who can't even throw anymore, that's the number one with a bullet disaster. Then Tampa if they lose to the Eagles, and then Buffalo.
I disagree with the Tampa thing. House money. They won the championship last year. That thing's over. That thing's settled. Tampa Bay, they'll sleep well if they lose opening weekend.
And they're playing Philly at home.
Well, don't lose it. I know it's a bad loss, but season's not a failure. Arizona, who cares either way? Rams, oh, my God, after all the money they've spent, all the draft picks they've sent out the door, just to push all their chips to the middle of the table to go, what, one and done? Losing the first round? No. Epic fail. Dallas, epic fail. KC, epic fail. Bills, good one. Epic fail. And Patriots, epic. You don't spend that kind of money and get a good year out of the best rookie quarterback on the board to go one and done after losing three of your last four and what would amount to then four of your last five. Epic fail. I stand by it. All right, here comes an update from Big Jim Murray. Then back to your calls with Greg Bedard. Fail.
This Sports Hub on-demand content is brought to you by Miller Lite. Miller Lite, official partner of the Boston Celtics, would like to say cheers to 75 years of Boston Celtics basketball, to 17 banners, to the players, coaches, and staff from yesterday and today. And of course, cheers to Celtics fans everywhere. So raise the original light beer to this storied franchise and cheers to another 75 years of Boston Celtics basketball. From your friends at Miller Lite, it's game time, it's Miller time.
He is a manipulative weasel.
And Matt.
He does himself no service by actually talking.
You've got to listen to Believe.
It's about me. Yes, absolutely.
It's about me.
No question.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Are there people behind the scenes, the people who you trust, your agent, somebody else, that can do some of the background work or some of the things to track down so you don't have, so that you can be in a better position, but at the same time focused on who you're playing?
I'm sure that happens. Like, as I said, I'm not really, I never get involved in that, you know, and I'm very content with my focus being strictly and completely on the Bills.
So it was Josh McDaniels today. He was asked earlier if he'd been contacted yet for a head coaching vacancy. He said he didn't know. I think that's what he said. Jimmy, number one, just play number one, please.
So I know your focus is on the Bills, but I just needed to ask if you've heard from anyone about about any vacancies that are out there, and is being a head coach again still one of your goals?
I know nothing about that, and I like as same as I've said in the past, if that's in the cards for me, great. But I am totally focused and immersed in the preparation for the Buffalo Bills.
So I've heard nothing about that. I'd like to think if someone's contacted him or was going to contact him that he would know about it. So let's just take it for what it is, that the phone isn't ringing for Josh McDaniels. For now, I'll give you a second here, Greg. Let's hear from Gerard Mayo, though. Number one, Jimmy, same question asked to Gerard Mayo, number one.
Obviously, no surprise your name came up again during this coaching hiring cycle. Will you be taking that interview even as you guys are preparing for the Bills this Saturday?
Right now, you know, all my focus is on the Buffalo Bills. I'll absolutely take the interview, but right now, like, it's all about the Bills.
So I like it. McDaniels won't say a thing, sort of like maybe knows how it goes down there in Foxborough, doesn't even want any part of it, where Gerard Mayo can barely contain himself. You know, it's like, and I'll play another cut or two. He's like, yeah, no, I'm just focused on the Buffalo Bills. I mean, I'm definitely taking that interview, but yeah, I'm just focused on the Bills. That's all I care about. But oh, believe me, I'm taking that damn interview. Like, he's horned up for a job, you could tell. Number two, Jimmy.
So this is probably going to sound like a silly question, but is being a head coach one of your goals in your career?
Always has been, Jim. Always has been.
And what are those processes like, those interview processes for you?
Well, I've only had one. I had the one last year with Philadelphia. It was a great experience. I was able to go out there and just talk a lot about football, talk a lot about, you know, just different philosophies. And it's good to have those conversations, you know, whether it's around leadership philosophy or, you know, team philosophy, team structure, all that stuff. So I love talking ball. I love developing people. That's one of the things that I enjoy doing. But that's always been the goal for me.
So I like it. Mayo's not afraid. So anyway, there's a precursor to the question, Greg. How do you think this is all going to shake out? The Pats going to lose some guys?
I think Mayo stands a decent chance of getting a job. He would fit the bill for teams that are looking for coaches that have strong GMs. That, you know, basically, I think, well, there's three ways to organize a team. There's the Patriots way, where the coach is all powerful and aligns everything. Those are very rare. McDaniel's got his chance to do that in Denver at a very young age. And obviously that didn't work. You have a strong GM, like say Denver has with George Payton and some other places. Or you have a strong coach that at least gets to pick his own personnel guy, which it looks like that might happen in New York. I think that Mayo would be appealing to a strong GM type because he's not going to try to wrest power away from them, and I think he'd be appealing for that. As far as McDaniels, I think pretty much everybody in the league knows that McDaniels will only consider a head coaching situation where things are aligned the way he wants to. Basically, he gets to pick his own personnel guy. He's fine answering to an owner, you know, something along those lines. But the guys who are strong GMs, I do not think Josh McDaniels is high on their list because they know by inviting McDaniels in that they could get usurped and pushed out at some point. And strong GMs are not in the business of doing that.
If you had to guess, McDaniels is still here?
I would say yes. I would lean that he's still there, but two jobs just opened up where the alignment could be to his liking: Chicago and Minnesota. Right now, they don't have GMs. I doubt it with the Bears because it sounds like Bill Polian's very involved in that, and he kind of has his list and his guys that he goes off of. I doubt that McDaniels is on that list. You know, Minnesota, I think, would be appealing because they're starting fresh. They pushed out Rick Spielman as well. So I would say that the chances are strong that McDaniels is still here.
Bill Polian leading the search for the Bears. Now, that is, talk about getting a new age thinker, someone on the cutting edge, someone with fresh ideas and a good, you know, fresh look at the situation. Let's go get the fossil that is Bill Polian. Again, this goes back to, and you know, as far as Virginia McCaskey is concerned, Bill Polian is a young pup. This is the problem. This is the problem in the league. It's the ownership and the decisions that they make and the kids that have taken over the team. And Virginia's no kid, but you know what I'm saying. Anyway, Bill Polian, how do you like them apples? All right, I promise. Back to your calls. Final game thoughts with Greg Bedard, Patriots, Bills, in our long commercial-free segment next.
This Sports Hub On Demand content is brought to you by Speedy Oil Change and Auto Service.
At Speedy Oil Change and Auto Service, our total trust guarantee gives you 20/20 vision into everything we do. From service bay cameras, to service bay views, to our transparent pricing. Each and every day.
Stop by your neighborhood Speedy today and see what makes us better. Visit SpeedyNewEngland.com to find your location and save up to $10 on a 17-point oil change. See store for details, restrictions, and exclusions.
Mutual.
The best analysis.
Forget about what's being said. Everyone's ripping someone for something somewhere.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hey, Bill, you've got, you know, a few guys that'll be playing in their first playoff game this weekend. I wonder if there's anything that you kind of tell those guys to make sure they kind of, you know, handle it the right way this week.
Yeah, try to play and coach well. It's a one-game season. It's no big mystery.
Well, that was Bill Belichick from yesterday. He really wasn't having much in that conference call. someone peed in his cornflakes. But, Greg, who are you looking for with the Patriots here in this game on Saturday night? First-year playoff guy or not? Who are the important players?
Well, I think the game plan is pretty simple for the Patriots on both sides of the ball. I think they need to be the more physical team. They need to be the more physical team overall in general. That's the biggest thing. I think they need to get back to running the ball even more against Buffalo, hitting on play action offensively. I think that's where their advantage is against Buffalo. Just shove them around like you did in the first matchup. I think there is an avenue for that. On defense, they have to be more physical at the line of scrimmage against these Bills receivers and everybody else. They are way too passive. They certainly were in the last matchup. That hasn't really changed in recent weeks. Reroute guys. Guys run across the middle within the 5-yard block box. Knock them off their block. I would play, like I said earlier, a lot more defensive backs on the field. I'm not even putting Juwan Bentley or Dante Hightower at linebacker, certainly in passing situations. I'm going with safeties. I want Kyle Duggar on the field. I expect he'll be back. I want him spying on Josh Allen at all times. Go attack him because, from the fourth down play in the last matchup, Jamie Collins, gets faked out by Josh Allen now. So I want somebody even more younger and athletic, younger legs to stay after him. The Patriots have to get back to being the more physical team. They have to execute at a high level. Mac needs to play well. They need to win the turnover battle. They're 8-0 when they win the turnover battle. Their record is, I think, 1-6 or 1-5 when they lose the turnover battle. Josh Allen, no matter how well he plays, he's going to throw balls at you. You got to catch them. You win the turnover battle, control the line of scrimmage, be more physical. I think the Patriots can win.
Okay, how about this guy, Mike in Weymouth? What do you want to talk about, Mike?
Hey, so the defensive line right now is dysfunctional. They don't play the run, they don't get sacks, and they frequently lose containment on big plays on third down. So if Christian Barmore is healthy or not, does it even matter? Or will they just suck less than they already do?
Okay, so Christian Barmore matters. What are your thoughts on his availability for Saturday night, Greg?
I have a hard time seeing him, playing. If he does, how effective he is. I mean, yes, they need a very effective Christian Barmore, especially in passing situations. The interior of the Patriots, and this goes for everybody, including my guy Lawrence Guy over the balance of the season, they have been atrocious. That was supposed to be the big change this year, that they invested in the defensive line. They signed Godchow, who has revealed himself to be undersized and not strong enough at the point of attack. Lawrence Guy is slowing down a little bit. They signed him, brought him back. They have no depth behind him at all. Carl Davis is okay. Daniel Ekwuale is another, very sort of depth piece. They're way too soft in the middle of that defense, and they get shoved around. The Dolphins just kept running belly plays for 5 and 6 yards all the time. It's been borderline embarrassing, but Barmore would help. I have a hard time seeing him being ready after being carted off and not putting any weight on his knee. There might not be major structural damage, but for him to answer the bell and be really good in this game, I have a hard time seeing that.
Joe in Pittsfield, what do you got for Greg Bedard?
Yes, Greg, I got a question about the secondary in that. I agree with you with putting a real good spy on him that's quick enough. But do you really have faith in the secondary to be able to stop Buffalo? I really don't. I think they lack the speed and the toughness. What do you think?
Discuss.
Sorry, I missed part of his question. Was he just talking about the cornerbacks, like matching up in general?
The secondary, the secondary as a whole, I think.
Well, look, we touched on it earlier, with the Gilmore trade and then Jonathan Jones injury. I don't think the way the Patriots have called these games and what they have shown on film is they don't have a lot of confidence in the defense. They're much more likely to play, sort of softer zone and try to get the quarterback to make a mistake that way. And it's harder these days to do that. You would like to see them be a little bit more aggressive. They were deathly afraid of Stephon Gilmore Stephon Diggs in the last matchup, even though they didn't have Davis, they didn't have Beasley. They were very scared of him playing off. J.C. Jackson looked scared. It would be nice to see J.C. Jackson. This could be his last sort of showcase game before the offseason. I assume he's going to be franchise tagged. But, you know, if Jackson wants it and he talks a big game, let him go out there and play man-to-man bump and run against Stephon Diggs the whole game. I would love to see that. I think it makes them a better defense. I don't have a lot of confidence that's going to happen. It looks like the Patriots just want to play for field goals and hope that Josh Allen makes a big turnover. Could happen. But judging on, you know, sort of the way Allen has played against the Patriots the last couple of years, I wouldn't hold my breath.
Okay, Danny in Rhode Island with the question of the week. Go ahead, Danny.
Hey, guys. I'm honestly amazed with how many Patriot fans have just accepted the fact that, oh, this season's a success no matter what. Like Chris Gasper said, because they made the playoffs, I mean, they were coming out of the bye week as the number one seed, 9-5, in a historically kind of bad AFC, where if they had just gone 12-5, they would have been the number one seed. I mean, if they do lose to Buffalo this week, I get, you know, if they win, it's a success. But, Greg, like, what do you think? I mean, they were in such a good spot. I think it's harsh to say failure, but I don't think it's fair to label it as a success if they go one and done in the playoffs, just considering where they were and how they finished the season, having played one playoff team, and that was at home against the Bills.
Yeah, no, so there it is. If they lose Saturday night in Buffalo, is this season a success?
Yeah, I think you guys asked this in the last week or two, and my answer was I wanted to see how they finished. And if they go to Buffalo and fall behind again, if it's typically what we've seen in the last month and they dig themselves too big a hole and can't win the game, and if they, you know, if they aren't all that competitive in this game, it is not a successful season to me. Losing four out of five to finish the season where you were, with coming off a bye, you had a late Thursday night game, everything was set up for you to fall on your face like that, I'm sorry, it's not a wholly successful season. I feel good about some of the things, like, you know, Mac Jones in terms of what he showed as a rookie. But as far as the team, where they are, to lose four or five and fall on your face, not successful season.
Not a successful year. It's not. I mean, it's, again, it's like, but that doesn't mean it's like a zero sum. Sure, there were some positive things. Like, so I'm not saying like it's like a complete zero. It's a useless. But, you know, the line of demarcation, 51% to 49. No, you're below the line. 10-7 is just not that good of a year to go one and done, especially when you did hit the quarterback. So you hit the quarterback. And the same folks out there who will tell you, you know, they've accomplished everything they've had to accomplish are the same ones that told you that the Pats got the best rookie quarterback in the field and Mac Jones is one of the best rookie quarterbacks of all time. So wait a minute. You're going to have one of the best rookie quarterbacks of all time paired with the greatest coach of all time. And in December, mid-December, you're going to own the number one seed in the conference. Road to the Super Bowl goes through you. And between that, the number one seed, the best coach of all time, one of the best rookie quarterbacks of all time, you're going to lose four or five and go one and done in the playoffs? On what planet? What has happened to us if that's a success? Like, give me a break. That's just not that good. What that is middling. You are middling. And I doubt they spent $180 million guaranteed to middle. So in terms of this whole thing, now that all changes if they win on Saturday. If they win on Saturday, it all goes away. That whole analysis there goes away. The last month goes away. And maybe not entirely, because if you're the number one seed, you have a bye in your home for the divisional game. But be that as it may, if you go to the divisional round and you're in it, then it largely goes away and it all's forgiven. So that's like, those are the stakes, I think, this week, Greg. They're pretty big.
I would agree with you, Mike. I do think that they're pretty big, and it's just, you know, I don't apologize, but, you know, I know I've been rather negative about the team today. You know, I'm sorry. That's just, you know, when I watch bad football, it makes me grumpy. You know, when they play good football, it makes me happy. And the Patriots are not playing good football at this point. Can they pull themselves out of this tailspin and put together a game? Yeah, they could. They have the guys to do it. I just don't have a lot of confidence that that's going to happen.
What makes you happy?
Yeah, that doesn't involve it being ladled in butter. But that, But that's the old Bedard. That's not the new. What's the weight loss company?
That's not on the Awaken 180 plan.
The Awaken 180. I didn't want to say the wrong weight loss company. Okay. I think butter probably is Awaken. But either way, that's a story for a different day. Yeah. Greg, thanks for coming in, man. I appreciate it.
Sounds good. See you guys.
See you, big boy.
See you, Greg. We'll win, lose, or draw. We will catch Greg next Tuesday. He'll either come in and get us ready for the divisional game or recap the Patriots season. And he was very down on the team. We'll relive some of those clips later on in the program. But next, we just want to mix it up a little bit with a quick Celtics Minute and Bruins Minute. There's developments on the table with both teams, and we'll get to them right after Big Jim Murray gets you updated. 90 seconds, no commercials.
Hey, it's Greg Bedard from BostonSportsJournal.com. It's January, the time of year we're bombarded with weight loss commercials. Gyms, exercise equipment, diet plans, and full-service programs like Awaken 180 Weight Loss. No matter who's advertising, it's good to see so many people taking the steps to get healthy. Awaken 180 won't discredit alternative methods for weight loss. If other programs have you feeling full, energized, and has a plan for keeping the weight off, feel proud. If you haven't selected a program yet, I suggest doing what I did and check out Awaken 180 Weight Loss. Set up a consultation, ask questions, and have enough information to decide if it's right for you. To answer a few questions now, yes, it's easy. No, the gym isn't required. And yes, Awaken 180 provides free support for life after you lose the weight. I've now lost 60 pounds, and each week I'm getting closer to my goal thanks to Awaken 180. 7 locations. I go to the newest in Auburn. Book your consultation today at awaken180weightloss.com.